Hare Krishna. Welcome. Is your first time here? Oh, nice. Nice to see you again. Hare Krishna. So today we'll start with questions. Questions are the answer. Any questions? Yeah. And use the microphone, please.
So as part of Bhakti Shastri, we were discussing the 8th chapter, and we had a question that in the 24th and 25th verses, Krishna says that the yogi who passes away during smoke and the waxing waning moon and all those things, there are two questions. One thing is, what does it mean by passing in the smoke? Is it like there is smoke all around you, you leave your body? And the second question was, all those conditions which Krishna said in that particular verse, is it a must that every single condition has to be met for that auspicious time to happen, or is it one condition met among the many conditions is the auspicious time?
Well, in general, those, you know, the idea of conditions, I mean, really, first of all, a question I have is why are we asking the question? What's the point of that question? And that's rhetorical, because I know why you're asking the question, basically. I mean, it's a detail. Really, we should take the essence of that last part of, and the whole chapter, and what it leads to in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And that is that the devotee just depends on Krishna. That's the main point. And there may be so many different combinations and permutations of circumstances that are necessary or not necessary. And they're endlessly troublesome, first of all. There's darkness and there's light in this world, and there's all kinds of combinations of those too, according to the modes of material nature, and all kinds of exceptions. So I'm answering in a really broad, general way, because I think it's useful, because the purpose of that, of understanding that last part, is that there's all kinds of considerations that we can take up, even while we're living our life, as far as, for instance, in astrology, I've seen people take that to the extreme and consider that the astrologer told me that I have to live in a place that starts with the letter I. So I was thinking of Ireland and something this, that, and I asked the devotee, said, why not Iraq? You know, it starts with an I. So many considerations about how to move here and there, but Narayana Paraksarve Nakutashana Bibiti Swarga Pavarga Narakeshu Apituliana Darshana. The devotee doesn't care whether it's Iraq or Ireland, as long as the service to Krishna is there. It's not so much of a consideration. Once in Los Angeles, there was this hoax about how California was going to fall into the ocean because a big earthquake was coming. This was in the 70s. And somebody had predicted scientifically that the earthquake was coming, it was going to divide the state, and half of it was going to fall into the ocean, and that was it. Civilization as we know it in California was finished. And even some devotees bought into that. So they packed up and they moved to Arizona or something for a while, right past the time when it was supposedly going to occur. And when Prabhupada heard about it, they said, what? They left the deities to go to us, Arizona? Of course, there was somebody there with the deities, but those devotees thought, we'll go be safe, and then Krishna can float off into the ocean. And the idea was, better stay and do your service and float off into the ocean, in those circumstances. And that's the mood of that last part of the 8th chapter, is that there are all kinds of calculations we can make about how to move around in this world. And ultimately, especially in Kali Yuga, our only resort is to completely depend on Krishna, and that naite sriti parta janan. What is it? Eti muyati. Naite sriti parta janan. That won't be in the shloka book. It'll be in the 8th chapter of the Gita. That. Thank you. Yogi muhyati kashchana tasmat sarveshu kaleshu yoga yukto bhavarjuna. Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered, therefore always be always fixed in devotion. Purport: Krishna is here advising Arjuna that he should not be disturbed by the different paths the soul can take when leaving the material world. A devotee of the Supreme Lord should not worry whether he will depart by arrangement or by accident. Just like our godbrother, Aindra Prabhu, just departed from this world just like that, you know, in one evening. Still young, too. And a gas tank blew up in his room when he was lighting a... Oh, you didn't... It's all over the internet. We talked about it yesterday. Yeah, it was an accident. He lived in a small room in the ashram there, and there was a... This happens all the time in India. Gas tanks blow up. Anyway, he went to light his gas tank, and it exploded. And yes, could you use the microphone?
I guess in our country they put like a cent in the gas, and in other countries they don't. And so
India would be one of those.
In Mexico, they have a lot of accidents like that, burns and things.
Yeah. They put a rotten egg smell in America so you can smell the gas. And there have been two other explosions right there in the community from gas tanks. Any case, my point is that there's a lot of speculation after he's departed about... you know, why Krishna did this and so on and so forth. We were just thinking today, King Kulashekar had a prayer to Krishna that, please let me depart now while I'm young and my mind is strong and I'm fixing my mind on your lotus feet. And there he was in the Dham with his deities, just getting ready to cook an offering and then, you know, rather have that or some other situation. So the main consideration for the devotees is how they're fixed in thinking of Krishna. So a devotee of the Supreme Lord should not worry whether he will depart by arrangement or by accident. The devotee should be firmly established in Krishna consciousness and chant Hare Krishna. He should know that concern over either of these two paths is troublesome. The best way to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness, thank you, is to be always dovetailed in his service, and this will make one's path to the spiritual kingdom safe, certain, and direct. What will make one's path safe, certain, and direct? And specifically is the word dovetailed. So whatever work we're doing, whatever service we're doing, do it for Krishna. Like if you're traveling and you're going to the Holy Dham or you're coming back from the Holy Dham, if your plane happens to go down, you still get credit that you're going to the Holy Dham. Not because you're coming back... It doesn't count. But, you know, your travel is dovetailed. You're using the power of your feet or whatever kind of conveyance you're riding on to go to the Holy Dham or to do Krishna's service. So in those circumstances, one way or another, we're going to leave this body. So as long as we're engaged in Krishna's service and we're connected to Krishna, it's an auspicious departure. The word yoga yukta is especially significant in this verse. One who is firm in yoga is constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness in all his activities. Sri Prabhu Goswami advises, anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjitaha. One should be unattached in material affairs and do everything in Krishna consciousness. By this system, which is called yukta vairagya, one attains perfection. You find this in the beginning of the 5th chapter, Gaya Sanitya Sanyasi Yona Dweshtin Kangshati Nirdvanvo Himahabaho Sukampandat Pramuchate. Krishna says, someone who always works without being attached to the fruits of his work and is not affected by the dualities of the world, is always liberated. Even while moving around in this world, you're not considered attached. And he said in the beginning of that chapter that it's better to work than to just renounce work, but to work without being attached to the fruit. Karma sannyas yoga. Therefore, the devotee is not disturbed by these descriptions because he knows that his passage to the supreme abode is guaranteed by devotional service. So my point here is don't be disturbed by it. I mean, what's the calculation, the smoke, the light? You know, these are all just ideas about calculating, about how I'm going to do it. But it's not it's not an ascending process that I'm going to arrange it perfectly so that I can become liberated. But I'm going to depend on Krishna. I'm always dovetailed in Krishna's service, and therefore I depend on Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the quintessential feeling of the devotee when he said, Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishware bhavatad bhakti rahai tuki twai. That he wants just unmotivated devotional service, and he's not even aiming for liberation. He says, birth after birth, I just want to come back and serve whatever situation you put me in. So it's not even a calculation for the devotee about, am I situated so that I can become liberated? Devotee's already liberated because of his or her intense desire to engage in the Lord's service. So whatever the requirement, it's never enough. Whatever it is, the smoke, the light, the darkness, all these kinds of considerations are mechanical. Pantastu koti shatavatsara sambragam yo vayuradhapi manaso munipun gavanam sopyasti yap praparasinya vichinta tatve govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. This verse by Brahma in the Brahma Samhita says that those who are the munipun gavanam, they're the most expert at figuring out which circumstance, how to leave the body, how to situate oneself. And what does he say? They end up far away from the tips of the toes of the lotus feet of Krishna. They barely get there. Even they cannot approach. But somebody who has bhakti, then Krishna comes and gets them. This should be our mentality. We sit outside Krishna's door and we wait and say, Krishna, when you want me, I'll come and get you. We don't even look for Krishna. We're not looking for Krishna. We're looking for service to Krishna. Krishna's everywhere, but we can't see him with mundane eyes. But when we are looking for service to Krishna, that's where Krishna is. In the Bhagavad Gita, he says, I'm in yajna. If you want to know where I am, I'm in yajna. So we should be alert to where is the service? Where can I do service? Then, according to this chapter, this attaining the supreme, Vedeshu Yagdeshu Tapasu Chaiva Daneshu Yapunya Palam Pratishtam Atyeti Tatsarvamidam Vaditva Yogi Paramstanam Upaiti Chajam. If you take that attitude and that course in life to just depend on Krishna, then Krishna is saying in the very last chapter, the last verse of this chapter, you won't miss anything. You won't miss anything. And if you become a munipun gavanam, you become the greatest of munis, and you figure out all the ways that you're going to become liberated from this world and how to leave during the perfect time, you still won't get there. You're still not. It's an imagined kind of a liberation, because real liberation, yene aravindaksha vimuktabhaninas tvayasta bhavad avashuddha buddhaya aruya krishna paramparam tata patantyato nadrita yushmanangraya. Those who are not depending on Krishna and his mercy to elevate end up with an imagined kind of liberation which is not stable. It won't endure. Any other question? Yes, Rakshit, and then Ramananda.
So related to this, that the timing or light or darkness at the time of departure is not a devotee's concern. Would we also say that for a devotee to be thinking about Krishna at the time of death is a concern or not a concern, or it's already implied in the fact that he's engaged in devotional service and therefore is thinking about Krishna? Because there is another verse that says that one who thinks about Krishna at the time of death will surely go to him, mm-hmm. or come to him. So should this be a devotee's concern or not be his concern when he's engaged?
This is our only concern.
Is the only concern.
Yeah. There are many rules and regulations in the scripture, and some of them are do's and some of them are do-nots. And all of them are servants. Imagine all these rules and regulations are personified, and they're all standing as servants to two principles. And those two principles are always remember Krishna and never forget him. Those are the principles, and everything else serves that. And therefore, if you get into a situation where you're doing rules and regulations, but they're not helping you to remain Krishna, then beginning verses in the Bhagavatam say, "Shrama eva hi kevalam." Certainly, definitely, without question, this is shrama. It means useless labor. So, our activities, our practice, should bring us to the point of remembering Krishna. Tasmat ekena manasa bhagavan satvatambati shotavya kirtitavyascha dyeya pujascha nityada. Through these practices of devotional service with one-pointed attention, we should be remembering Krishna. That's the main issue. But someone who's sincerely trying to remember Krishna but is not able to, because death is a very trying circumstance. We know from the verse, Vayura nilamamritam atedam bashmantam shariram om krato smarakritam smara krato smarakritam smara. That's the 17th mantra in the Sri Upanishad, where the devotee says, let this temporary body be burnt to ashes and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you're the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I've done for you. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the devotee doesn't have to say that. Please remember all my sacrifices. Krishna certainly knows, you know, what you gave, what you held back, everything. And for a sincere devotee, even if such a sincere devotee is not able to remember Krishna at the time of death, Krishna will remember him. Again, it's a descending process.
This question is again goes into kind of measurements and all. Maybe it's not worth asking, but I ask this anyway because it came up during the Bhakti Sastri class. This is regarding how super soul is pervaded. So there are several statements. One is super soul exists, pervades each and every atom of the universe. Another statement is super soul is located in the heart of a living being, about the size of a thumb. And another statement that I hear from chapter 8, one of the purport of one of these verses is that he enters into the... first of all, it talks about the living entity, which is 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair. And then it talks about Lord so inconceivably small that he enters into the heart of this particle, that is living entity. Mm-hmm. So the question is, now there are three aspects. One super soul in the heart, about 8 inches, about size of the thumb. One super soul in the heart, in each and every atom. That means that includes all the atoms of the body also. And another super soul is in the heart of a living being, not the body, but the actual living being. So what is this? Can we just, you know, comment
on
this? Yeah.
Where is he? So we all want to know. Let's see your thumb. Come up here. Hold it up. So he's super soul's size of thumb. His thumb is half the size as my thumb. I don't know. I wasn't there when it happened. So the thumbs are different sizes. If we bring it, if we bring a, you know, a cat in here, it doesn't have a thumb. And yes.
In the purport of one of the verses which I read long time ago, Prabhupada quoted that the size of the thumb is in proportion to the size of the body.
Yeah. So you answer your own question.
Yeah. Yeah. But my question is actually, you know, related to these three aspects of the super soul.
Okay. One, well, I'm getting there. So the idea of the size of a thumb is to give a general idea. It's not literal, because thumbs are different sizes, and it's just an idea of Krishna's medium size, and he's there within the heart. You know, yogis can perceive Krishna within the heart. They can actually see him there, and we can perceive him also by the form direction that we get from the intelligence of the form direction of the supersoul. So we know he's there. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha. He's giving us intelligence, and we can feel that form direction coming from supersoul. Who said that? I didn't. You know, that intelligence came in, and I feel it, feeling the form direction there. So we know he's there. So the Shastra gives some idea about Krishna's size, that he's residing within the area of the heart. This also came up when the first heart transplants took place in the 70s. And people said, aha, look at this. See, they changed the heart. And what happened to the super soul? And where's the soul? And all this kind of stuff. But it's not a mechanical thing. Krishna's all-pervading. And he can expand himself and be in all places at the same time and still have form. This is his Aishvarya that he talks about in the beginning of the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how he's all pervading at the same time. And so Krishna is there along with the soul. It's described in Shastra, there's two birds in one tree. The body is the tree, and then the two birds. There's one eating bird and one observing bird. So the observing bird is Krishna. And then the eating bird is the living entity, who's the same in qualities, part and parcel with Krishna, but he's an anksha, and Krishna is our friend. So he's observing us. So in that sense, he's next to the soul. And in other statements, he in the context of him entering within the particle of the soul is described, kesha gra shatabhaga sha sharam sha shadrishatmakaha jiva sukshma swarupo yang sankhyatito hi chitkana. Again, some measurement is there about being, take a hair, whose hair? An elephant's hair is a lot thicker than mine, and mine might be thicker than yours or vice versa, but still, 1/10,000 size of the tip of a hair, right? So that's approximate measurement, because it's a hair. But Krishna, because it's described in context of his opulence, because Krishna's larger, he's larger than the largest, but he's also smaller than the smallest. So the soul is being described as the smallest particle, but Krishna becomes smaller than the smallest and actually enter within that particle. So in that context, it's described how he can enter he can become smaller than soul, actually enter within the heart of that, you know, the particle of the soul. And that's the opulence of Krishna. Not that just he's bigger than the biggest, but also inclusive within him being Purnam and also being the greatest is also that he can become the smallest particle. And ekopyasaura charitam jagananda kotim yach chaktir asti jagananda chayayananta andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamari purusham damahambhajami. Lord Brahma's describing how Krishna has expanded everywhere within all the different particles of the universe. So he's all pervading. And I just read yesterday, actually, where Prabhupada said that there are as many souls as there are atoms within the universe. Prabhupada said once on a morning walk that there's souls even within the atom. But we didn't get into all the details on that. But it is described that he has expanded he's all-pervading. He's everywhere, and even within all the particles. And he can become smaller than the smallest particle. Maya has a couple meanings. One is what we know it means, that which is not. Another meaning of Maya is to measure. Trying to measure things. Using my intelligence to measure up. Why do I want to measure things generally? Generally, I want to measure things because I want to bring them under my control. As soon as I know, you know, how far it is from here to there, how big it is, then I know how I'm going to deal with it, how I'm going to control it and take control of the situation. So from my intelligence, I want to measure everything. But Krishna doesn't always allow that. When Mother Yashoda was chasing after Krishna and finally caught him, she wanted to bind him. And she tied him up with some ropes to a grinding mortar, but the rope was two inches too short. And all of her friends were looking over the fence or into the yard, seeing this fun going on, gave more ropes, said, here, try this. And there's lots of ropes in a cowherd village because they use ropes for many things. So she added on, and every time it was 2 inches too short. So our attempt to measure and to tie up Krishna with our intellect and say, okay, now I've got him. I know right where he is. I know, like, we can't catch him like that. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santaksadeva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram achintugana swarupam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. The person who has prema anjana, they have this salve of love on their eyes. Then they see Krishna everywhere. They see right where he is. Never out of vision. Yes.
I had this question in Bhakti Shastri course, but I came late. I could not ask. So the question is about the Paramatma feature, which is all pervading, and it says that is pervading by his material energy in the purport. My question is Paramatma feature in the spiritual world?
No, he's here in the material world. It's a special feature of the Lord who comes here. Just like sometimes if you set up for a pandal, you know, when you're having a festival and an event and you have to hire, you know, extra security or something like that. They come in there, you have some special, you know, security detail police who come in and they oversee the thing. And when that's finished, no more need. So Super Soul, the Paramatma feature is here specifically in the material world, accompanying the soul, but not in the spiritual world. Is that okay, Shivas? Okay. Yes.
This is just a follow-up to this question. If the Super Soul doesn't exist in the spiritual world, is there something else that kind of plays the role of Super Soul and more?
Well, Super Soul's Krishna. Yes. But we have a relationship with Krishna according to our, you know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Ye yatam mam prapadyante tamsta taiva bhajamyaham. Mama vart manuvartante manusha parta sarvasha." I mean, we're never out. We're always with Krishna. We're a part of Krishna. But sometimes we forget about him. And we become overwhelmed by material nature. So, Super Soul is Krishna. But it's a particular feature of Krishna, who's there reciprocating with us according to our desire. And you'll find in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, may I have a first canto, please? Description how when the Lord creates this material world, he enters within all of the different hearts of the living beings specifically to facilitate their enjoyment of material nature. And that's the kind of the feature of the Lord who comes to the material world according to our desire. In other words, my desire is to lord it over material nature. So he's there in that form to assist us. it's by his sanction that we're able to do anything. And the Vishnu forms of the Lord who create this material world and who oversee our activities here, well, they're described as, you know, Mahavishnu, when the prayers of personified Vedas go to the Lord who's lying on the ocean and they offer their prayers. Basically, he's sleeping and they're waking him up. And Prahlad Maharaj describes how the Lord is sleeping with half-closed eyes. Why is he sleeping? Because this material world is not very interesting. Why? Because the living entities are not very interested in Krishna. So why should he be so interested in them? He sends his expansion super soul to protect them to fulfill their desires. In Vraja, in Goloka, I mean, look at Lord Jagannath. His eyes are wide open like this, because there's always some there's always some wonderful exchange with the devotees. He's fully alert and aware and interested in what's going on. What's the replacement? I mean, there's no replacement. We are always connected to Krishna, but it's just a matter of which way. And the way that we're connected has to do with our particular mentality. And those, if you look at a picture of Hanuman, you've probably seen the picture of Hanuman when he's revealing his heart beyond his chest. And what do you see? Do you see super soul, four-handed form? What do you see when Hanuman opens his chest like that? You see Sitaram and Lakshman, and that's who's in his heart. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santaksadeva hridyeshu vilokayanti yam shyama sundaram achintu ganasurupam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Hare Krishna. So the, you know, a devotee who's the pure devotee sings shyama sundar within the heart and everywhere he looks. So according to our mode of service and the way we're seeing Krishna, he fulfills our desires. He manifests in a certain way. So super soul is a particular kind of manifestation. It's a particular manifestation of Krishna. He's reciprocating with the soul who's traveling in the material universe looking for something to eat. And he's just there facilitating. So even in this life, when we take to the process of pure devotional service and we develop that kind of emotion for Krishna, it's not that we see four-handed Paramatma within the heart. We'll actually see Shamasundar. Yayatam mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. The Lord manifests according to our reciprocation and our desire to see him. He fulfills our desires. It's not stereotyped. Krishna's unlimited. He's Yogeshwara. He can appear in any way that he likes. And specifically, he appears according to the desire of the devotee to see him in a certain way. Did that help? Okay. Another question. Okay, Junior.
Hari Rama.
Hari Rama.
So, last summer, between Radharani's birthday and Krishna's birthday, that I was given the 24 Vishnu forms with their four weapons or whatever they're holding. So to test that out, since you have Count One, just look at one and ask me what they're holding in their hands, and I should be able to tell you back. If you want to do that.
Vasudev.
Vasudev has, let me see. Oh, and Vasudev is right next to, Madhava. And then right next to Vasudeva Madhava is Keshava. Right next to Keshava is Janardana. So Vasudeva is the opposite of Janardana. So that's the easy one. So everyone knows Janardana is the disc, the conch, the club, and the flower. So then Vasudeva, and that's Vasudeva with the A. Well, anyway, it would be the conch, the disc, the flower, and the club. And I could do any one of the 24. So, and how come Hari Rama is not one of the Vishnumurtis?
Because how come he's not one of the Vishnumurtis?
Yeah, the 24 Vishnumurtis. And incidentally, Sridhar is the same as Damodar, Vishnumurti. Hmm.
Well, Hari Rama, Balaram, is the first expansion of Krishna from which the Chaturvyuha expands. So he's the source of those different expansions of Krishna.
Oh, I see. Oh, thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
There's a verse I wanted to refer you to. In the first canto, second chapter, Taya vilashiteshveshu guneshu gunavaniva anta pravishta abhati vrijnanina vrijimbritaha. After creating the material substance, the Lord, Vasudev, expands himself and enters into it. And although he is within the material modes of nature and appears to be one of the created beings, he is always fully enlightened in his transcendental position. Purport. The living entities are separated parts and parcels of the Lord, and the conditioned living entities who are unfit for the spiritual kingdom are strewn within the material world to enjoy matter to the fullest extent. As Paramatma, an eternal friend of the living entities, the Lord, by one of his plenary portions, accompanies the living entities to guide them in their material enjoyment and to become witness to all activities. While the living entities enjoy the material conditions, the Lord maintains his transcendental position without being affected by the material atmosphere. In the Vedic literature, Shruti, it is said that there are two birds in one tree. One of them is eating the fruit of the tree while the other is witnessing his actions. The witness is the Lord and the fruit eater is the living entity. The fruit eater, living entity, has forgotten his real identity and is overwhelmed in the fruit of activities of the material conditions. But the Lord, Paramatma, is always full in transcendental knowledge. That is the difference between the super soul and the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, the living entity, is controlled by the laws of nature, while the Paramatma, or the super soul, is the controller of the material energy. Yata yavihito vanir darushve kasva yonishu naneva pati vishvatma bhuteshu cha tatapuman. The Lord, as super soul, pervades all things, just as fire permeates wood. And so he appears to be of many varieties, though he is the absolute one without a second. Hare Krishna. Purport. Lord Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by one of his plenary parts, expands himself all over the material world, and his existence can be perceived even within the atomic energy. Matter, antimatter, proton, neutron, etc., all are different effects of the Paramatma feature of the Lord. As from wood, fire can be manifested, or as butter can be churned out of milk, so also the presence of the Lord as Paramatma can be felt by the process of legitimate hearing and chanting of the transcendental subjects, which are especially treated in the Vedic literatures like the Upanishads and Vedanta. Srimad Bhagavatam is the bona fide explanation of these literatures. The Lord can be realized through the oral reception of the transcendental message, and that is the only way to experience the transcendental subject. As fire is kindled from wood by another fire, the divine consciousness of man can similarly be kindled by another divine grace. His divine grace, the spiritual master, can kindle the spiritual fire from the wood-like living entity by imparting proper spiritual messages injected through the receptive ear. Therefore, one is required to approach the proper spiritual master with receptive ears only, and thus divine existence is gradually realized. The difference between animality and humanity lies in this process only. a human being can hear properly, whereas an animal cannot. We can hear unlimitedly, too. The ears are as wide as the sky, actually. You can go on hearing and hearing. And according to our capability, just as birds, according to their strength and their size and weight, they can fly at a certain height in the sky. So similarly, according to our capability, we can also understand and describe the Lord. And we gain capability more and more by the hearing process. Of course, we also become more qualified for that as well, especially by association. If we get good association and we render service, Shushu sho shradhanasya vasudeva kata ruchi syan mahat sevya viprapunya tirtana shevanat, then we get special impetus to hear. And that's, as Prabhupada says here, the difference between humanity and animality. We saw some seals today down on the beach, and they're just hanging around. The mothers are looking after their kids, and they're sunning themselves, getting ready to go back in the ocean soon to eat something. But if I pulled out a Bhagavatam down there, they would not be interested, I guarantee you. The real thing is interest in hearing. More questions? Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
This is more a comment, but there is a question implicit in it. And going back to the Paramatma feature of the Lord, which is there as in our discussion as we are having, he has entered the living entity and he has also entered the atom. And when we hear that, it itself poses a big dilemma of how this would be, because on one context, we know that the Paramatma feature and the living entity, both being similar in quality, one is a soul, the other is a super soul, and it has the property of consciousness, that we know that from the body, when the living entity departs, consciousness is gone and the body just merges into the dust. But yet, in the body particles where there are atoms, Krishna has entered the atom, the Paramatma is there, that we would have to say that the Paramatma feature of the Lord, which is there in the living entity, is in a different form than that it is in the atom, where it's performing some other function of providing some energy or some time function, whereas in the living entity, that Paramatma form is consciousness, life force, animation, all those things.
The souls are situated in the world according to their karma. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sadasad yoni janmasu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes how living entities are wandering. Brahmanda brahmate kon bhagyavan jeev. They're wandering, and he describes it like logs floating on an ocean, on a river, endless river. It keeps going on and on. And how they're situated variously depends upon their previous association with the three modes of material nature. And sometimes, according to Daiva Netrena, Karmana Daiva Netrena Jantur Deho Papateye, Striya Pravishta Udaram Pumsareta Kanashraya. Kapila Dev said, according to one's previous karma, one is placed within the womb of a particular mother through the particle of male semina, and then takes birth in that. And Krishna says that, of course, that's according to Gunasanga, because of my association with different modes of material nature, in this kind of aimless wandering in the material world, which is called samsara, which means just kind of wandering around from and going through this repeated process. And it's all a question of consciousness. And one living entity is situated within the body of a seal. The other is situated within the body of a human being in some kind of you know, cosmic evolution of consciousness through one point to another. And when one comes to the human form of life, it's considered very fortunate. Labvam sudur labam idam bahusam bhavante manusham artadam anitya apihadira. Krishna says this is a very rare situation to come into the human form. And being situated there, one has an opportunity, atato brahma jignasa, to inquire. This comes to full consciousness through this medium of the human body, has the opportunity to inquire. And in other situations, the soul may be restricted. You may be in the body of a plant or a fish or some. There's moving and non-moving living entities. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, some living entities can't move, and other living entities can move. And there's a certain amount of restriction in some, and you get unrestricted in the human form of life. Or practically, Prabhupada said, it's like if you're a bird in a cage, and then the master finally opens the cage and says, okay, now's your chance, you can fly away. That's the human form of life. So my preamble is just getting to the point of answering your implied question, which is just that according to our situation within a particular body, we have an opportunity to take to devotional service. Nonetheless, the super soul is still there along with the soul. Prabhupada told that on a morning walk along with Swarup Damodar. He said that the soul's there, the super soul's there. He's accompanying the soul wherever he goes. And in very low life forms, there's very little to do. And the only connection to Krishna is described by the prayers personified Vedas and Annamoy, or just their connection is through their process of consuming, eating energy. That energy is Krishna. They're consuming it, and that's their taste. It's just for eating. It's Krishna also, but that's the extent of their realization until they come to a higher position. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hride sharajuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudrani mayaya. Krishna says, Ishvara sarva bhutanam, within all living entities, I'm the Ishvara. So wherever the living entity is there, the Ishvara is also there. That connection is there. Sanitya nitya sambandha prakritischa paraivasa. There's an eternal connection there between the soul and the super soul. Krishna and the living entity. They're eternally connected. Mamayvamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. They're angas of Krishna.
So this reference to Krishna having entered the atom, and one would just look upon the atom as non-living element, is very difficult to comprehend. It would seem that reference to the atom is that Krishna has entered into the atom, where the atom is the smallest particle, and even the super soul, even the soul, is composed of those atoms. One may interpret it that way. Because otherwise, this entry into the atom, one would say the atom of hydrogen or the atom of carbon, which by itself doesn't have life, and Krishna is there, poses a question of comprehending it, that he is also in the atom of hydrogen, but there is no life there. So he must be there in some form, which is not really that life or the life force or consciousness, or is a very, very primitive type of consciousness, which is not manifest like the way living entities do, or that he's in just an energy form. He's there, but it's not that overt life or animation of consciousness. It's some form of energy that Krishna is there in the atom of hydrogen or carbon.
The relationship with the soul and the living entity is described by Krishna in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Aprayam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param jivabhuta mahabaho ya yedam daryate jagat. He describes two energies. One's the para and the other's apara. And the apara is this bhumir apo analovayu kamano bhudir evacha ahankara itiyam me bina prakritir ashtada. That these are earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. These are subtle, gross and subtle material energies. And all of them are provided as a medium and for the soul to act within when he misuses his independence and he becomes situated within matter. And Krishna enters within that situation to provide the soul the ability to use his senses to enjoy the three modes of material nature. He empowers him to do that. The minute analysis of the situation, I don't find as useful or even conclusive as the reason behind it, which is given very clearly in the Bhagavatam and also in the Bhagavad Gita. And the divisions of energy are in that way easier to understand, that there are separated material energies. Bina prakriti means separated material energies. Why is it separated? It's separated by consciousness, really, because those souls, rater tam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tadvitya atmanomayam yatapaso yata tamaha. Krishna told Brahma in the original, this is one of the first verses, four original verses of the Bhagavatam, which expanded into 18,000 verses. Therefore, it's a foundational verse. Rater tam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani. It means, without consciousness of me, then what you get is material energy, is what he says. Rater artam. If you see some value in something, but it doesn't have any connection to me, it doesn't have any value. It's maya. It's my illusory energy. And it's bina prakriti. It's separated from Krishna by consciousness. That's possible because of the independent nature of the soul to take the connection to Krishna or to be disconnected to Krishna, apparently. And therefore, the whole atmosphere of the material world becomes surcharged by this desire of the soul and the conglomerate of all souls together, actually. They all come out in that lotus stem when Brahma first creates the material world. They're all there, compact. They come out of the body of Lord Vishnu, and they're all within that stem of that lotus. And then according to their karma, previous karma from even the previous creation, Krishna, as super soul, reminds them and says, remember, you wanted to go to Kmart. You had a shopping list. And there's my shopping list. And they start all over again on this anadi karma, or this endless process of tasting the modes of material nature. And it goes on and on and on until there's an intervention. Maya mugda jivera nahi swata krishna gyan. Jivera kripaya hoila Krishna Veda Puran. That's Krishna's intervened by giving the Vedas, Krishna Veda Dvaipayana Vyas, so that human beings, when they come up to that level, they can hear it and they can understand. Many philosophers endlessly dissect the material nature and try to understand these minute differences between the elements. Some of them are called Vaisheshikas. It's actually a philosophy for dissecting material nature. Lord Kapiladev himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, describes the Sankhya, or a way of counting and dividing the material nature. The purpose of it is to come to understand Krishna. Sarvasya chahamrati sannivishto mataksmitir gyanam aponam cha. It's meant ultimately to divide everything out so you go like, okay, what's important in all this? And then you find the soul of the creation, which is Krishna. Ainanda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishame bhavam mudau kripaya tava pada pankaja stita duli sadrisham vachintaya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this prayer in the Shikshashtakam that beyond even, you know, addressing Krishna as the Paramatma, now he's addressing him as son of Nanda. Bhagavan, who's son of Nanda Maharaj, I just want to be your eternal servitor, particle of dust at your lotus feet. So our analysis of the material world and particles and which is inferior and superior, how the Lord's situated in the material world, etc., is meant to bring us to this kind of feeling of devotional service to the Lord. And if it doesn't, shrama eva hi kevalam. It's a useless waste of time. It's extensive labor for no apparent purpose. Kurnath Prabhu.
There's a nice discussion of the situation of the super soul in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, as talking about knowledge and the object of knowledge and the field and the knower of the field, and then the super soul as the knower of all the fields. And one point is that the super soul, although appears to be divided, is actually not divided. Just like the sun is shining everywhere, and everyone thinks it's shining on my head, but it's really just the one sun. But another point is that it's inside every living entity, it's also outside every living entity. So the super soul is present within every particle of creation, both in the inferior energy as well as the superior energy. So he's inside, he's the knower of, he knows the pleasures and pains that are being experienced by every living entity, but he also is intimately connected with that which the living entity is experiencing, and the objects that are causing those experiences, that is his material energy as well. But he's always the same super soul. It's not that it's just two different kinds of super souls or two different kinds of functions.
Thank you. It's very useful. Prahlad Maharaj proved also how the Lord... We sing this song all the time in our prayers to the Lord Nrisimhadev, how he's outside, he's inside. And Prahlad Maharaj practically proved it, because when he was challenged by his father, who was an atheist, say, I can't see him anywhere. Where are you saying he is again? And he says, he's everywhere. I see him everywhere. He says, is he in the pillar? He said, yes, he's in the pillar. And when Hiranyakashipu attempted to attack the pillar and then he was going to attack his son, Nrisimhadeva appeared from the pillar. Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. He's there. He's there within, within every atom. And it's,
that came out is this distinction that you made between inferior energy and the other energy. That even in the inferior energy, Krishna is there associated with it.
The taste of water, yeah. The light of the sun.
Correct.
It's his impersonal feature. Prabhupada mentions that. Sound and ether, ability, man, right?
And that would then be consistent that he's in the atoms of those things.
All pervading Vishnu.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
Just a small point here. Actually, it is said that in the spiritual world, everything is full of consciousness. Just like the instance is given about Mother Yashoda, the Damodar Lila, where Mother Yashoda is cooking, boiling milk for Krishna. And then, and at that same time, she's trying to feed Krishna. And then the milk is thinking that if Mother Yashoda feeds Krishna with all her milk, then what is the use of me? So that milk tries to commit suicide by, boiling over and falling. So the point over here is that in spiritual world, everything, from a gulab jamun to a flower, everything is full of consciousness. And when the flower sees, when the Krishna sees flower, the flower becomes more beautiful. And when the beauty of the flower increases, Krishna also becomes very happy. And when the flower sees that the Krishna has become happy, it becomes all the more beautiful. And it goes on till eternity. So, but when that spirit soul, it dissociates itself from the Krishna and it associates with the inferior material energy, then it loses, it tries to lose that consciousness. It in varying degrees, just like in Bhagavad Gita, it explained, just like the fire is covered by smoke, or the womb, the child is covered in the womb, just like in the same various degrees of ignorances, the living entity is covered over. So actually everything, and what is the process of making everything back to its original, restoring everything in the same consciousness is, just like, for example, this is a microphone. If it is a material energy, but when we employ this material energy in the service of Krishna, it becomes spiritual. So just some 10 cents for which I was thinking.
Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagnau Brahmanohutam Tenaiva Brahmagantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhina. Backing up your point about dovetailing, the material energy, Krishna says, anything that's used in his service, he gives the example of a homa, a fire yajna. All the person who's offering the fire yajna, the instruments that are being used to offer the ghee itself, the fire, all of them become Brahman, because their purpose is Brahman. And just in the realm of, you mentioned the consciousness of the spiritual world, that bhakti that we perform here, we may take ordinary elements like ghee and sugar and flour and things like that. And when they're cooked and offered to Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was commenting when he honored the prasadam after it was offered. He said, these are not ordinary elements. They're actually spiritual. And Keshav Bharati Maharaj made the point in his class the other morning that when you make a flower garland for Krishna, say, for instance, you sit it back in the middle unit there on one flower garland making marathon, and everyone piles in their flower garlands and they get offered to Krishna by the pujari later. He was making the point, Krishna knows who made which flower garland. That's his all-pervading consciousness, and you make one for him, he knows exactly who made it and why they made it and the circumstances and so forth. Becomes connected to Krishna through service. You had another point, Akarna? These verses in the ninth chapter, let's look at 9:4. It's on page 404. And it gives a little bit of explanation of this idea of the mystic opulence of Krishna, how he's within the world but not in it at the same time. In the famous verse, Mayata tamidam sarvam jagaravyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nacham teshvavastitaha. By me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Text 5. Nacha matstani bhutani pashyame yogamaishvaram bhuta brinnacha bhuta sto mamatma bhuta bhavanaha. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. And text 6, Yatakashastito nityam vayu sarvatrago mahan tatasarvani bhutani matstani tyupadaraya. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. Any other questions? It's hard thinking of questions, huh? When you're in the midst of hearing and chanting, however, and also, you know, explaining the philosophy to others, lots of questions come up. And questions are really important. So the more questions that are generated, the more questions we generate in the process of our discussions and our research and everything, the more we'll have a hunger to answer. And the more we have a hunger to answer them, this perpetuates our hearing and chanting. It's like that kind of curiosity. And it also makes us very much alert in our hearing and chanting. I've had this experience many times in discussions in spiritual circles, which is where I like to hang out. Oftentimes there are questions left hanging. They're not completely resolved. And then in the process of hearing and chanting, incidentally, I'll hear a lecture by someone, by Prabhupada, someone else speaking or reading, and then the answer comes, and then it gets completed. And this is the process of coming to very clear understanding and therefore determination in our devotional service. Siddhanta Bhulya Chitanara Kara Alash Iha Krishna Lage Sudrid Manash. Kaviraj Goswami says in the beginning of the Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that we shouldn't be lazy, but should go on discussing all these things. Sometimes it may seem troublesome. We shouldn't consider it troublesome, but we should go on churning these kinds of ideas because, he said, Siddhanta Bhulya Chitanakara Alash. Iha hoite Krishna lage sudrid manash. When we come closer to the Siddhanta, Siddhanta means knowing what something is and also what it isn't. And our mind becomes fixed and determined, he said, when we know the Siddhanta clearly and we move forward in devotional service. Karnath Prabhu.
I was thinking about what we mean when we say internal and external. And one thing that's interesting to me is there's a sign across the street. There's a fencing academy, California Fencing Academy. And the sign says, Forging Champions Inside and Out. And, you know, and I was thinking that, you know, the skills, you know, the actual activities of the body, of the, you know, of the athlete is being compared to external, and then the heart of the athlete, the determination, the doggedness, the motivation, or what is being compared to the inside of the athlete, that you know that there's something besides just having the muscle and the bone and even the reflexes, but there's also that willpower and enthusiasm, so and intention. But I'm thinking we talk about the internal energy and the external energy, and that the superior energy, the spiritual energy, is internal, and that we can be, you know, the Mahatmas are situated in the internal energy and they're guided by the internal energy, and that the demons are deluded by the external energy, and Krishna's inside everything and he's also outside everything. And I'm just wondering more if you could say something about internal and external and how these terms apply to spiritual and versus material issues.
Well, in the Shirish Upanishad, there's a verse, Tadejati tannayjati tadture tadvantike tarantarasya sarvasya tudusuva tadusarvasya sibhayataha. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He's far away, but he is very near within as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. And this experience of internal and external goes to consciousness. Everything is connected to our consciousness, because that's what we are. We are conscious living beings. And our sense of internal and external is also depending on our consciousness. And for the devotee, for someone who's connected to Krishna through consciousness, that person sees Krishna within everything, and he sees his hand within everything, and he sees how Krishna is moving everything. Tatenu kampam susamikshamanu bunjana evatmakritam vipakam. And he observes the environment as a manifestation of Krishna's mercy. That whatever comes to him, he sees as Krishna's arrangement. That's very much an internal kind of understanding. So even if there's something external, like if a light comes loose and falls on his head or something like that, he takes it as Krishna's mercy. That he's Krishna just gave me his mercy. He's reminding me that there's danger at every step in this material world. That's an internal consideration through consciousness, and which is achieved through hearing from the proper authority. And someone else might get hit on the head with a light bulb that comes loose and falls on his head, and say that this is a random act and doesn't connect it to Krishna, and therefore it's external to him. It's external, and doesn't see how it's connected. And so we connect to Krishna through the through consciousness. And the devotee's never separated from Krishna because he's always offering everything to Krishna and feeling Krishna's reciprocation. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati taraham bhaktyu paritam ashnami pariyatatmanaha. This is very much an internal process of offering a fruit or flower out of bhakti, out of love, as of his consideration that Krishna is a person and that he'll accept it. Then he has this internal experience of Krishna's reciprocation, of accepting it. And Prabhupada describes that in the verse about Rasoham Apsukonteya. Prabhashmi, he says, the taste of water. For the personalist experiences, drinks water, feels how it quenches his thirst, and then feels gratitude for Krishna as the person who's given him this substance, and he thinks of the personality of Krishna because of that. The impersonalist, he says, sees it as a, you know, an impersonal energy. And in the itam satam brahma sukhanu bhutya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena mayashritanam naradarakena sakam vijaru krita prunja punjaha. Shukadeva Goswami described how varied devotees in different kinds of consciousness have different experiences of Krishna. Itam satam brahma sukhanu bhukyam. Some are experiencing Krishna as the Brahman effulgence. Some dasyam gatanam paradaivatena, who are absorbed in Krishna in this mood of servitorship and awe and reverence. They see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And mayashritanam naradarakena, those who are in, affected by material consciousness, they see Krishna as an ordinary man. Sakam vrjaru krita punya punjaha, but those who have accumulated bhakti sukriti by the mercy of devotees, they see Krishna as their dear friend, and they're playing with him. As a friend, wrestling with him and so on. And when Krishna entered into Mathura, when he came out of Vrindavan, Akura brought him, and Krishna went there actually to kill Kamsa. And when he entered into the wrestling arena that had been arranged by Kamsa, actually Kamsa tried to kill Krishna before he got there because he had an elephant, Kuvalayapida, who was blocking the entrance of that big assembly of in that big auditorium, not an auditorium, a stadium, where they were going to wrestle. And Krishna, even though he was just a young boy, he wrestled with this gigantic, powerful elephant. And he ran all over the place. Sometimes he hid behind his leg, and the elephant was looking for him. And then he'd run to the other leg, and the elephant was getting frustrated, and sometimes Krishna would drag the elephant, and sometimes Krishna would be on the ground, and the elephant would try to stab him with his tusk, and just before the tusk came, then Krishna would roll out of the way, and the elephant's tusk would go in the ground. So finally, Krishna realized the time was getting late, so that he killed Kuvalayapida, and he had the tusk of that elephant resting on his shoulder, and he was sprinkled with some of the blood from the elephant, and he walked into that assembly with Balaram and his friends who had come with him. And when they got into the assembly, everyone was waiting for this big wrestling match to take place. And the ladies there saw Krishna as Cupid personified. The yogis saw him as the super soul. His parents saw him as the most ideal son. And others saw him as, member of their dynasty, and everyone had a different vision of him according to their particular internal realization. And so internal and external depends upon our perspective. And in the process of Krishna consciousness, we change that perspective. I saw it recently when I was flying and our plane got canceled due to mechanical troubles. Just the varied responses of all the people on the plane. And we had to get off. We had to deplane and then stand in so-called customer service for hours. And some people reacted by saying, you know, I'll never fly this airline again. I hate everybody, you know. And other people said, oh, you know, it's okay. These things happen. And I just looked around and the same thing was happening to everybody. But everyone reacted to it differently. Because of what? Because of the accumulation of association that they've had and some kind of realization that they had. And so their experience of what was happening was different because of their consciousness. So what I'm arguing, as you can tell, is that the idea of internal and external or Krishna being far away or very near as well is wholly dependent on our development of consciousness. And through the process of bhakti, which is the direct process of linking to Krishna through hearing and chanting about him in the association of pure devotees, then once consciousness becomes transformed and cheto dharpana marjanam, then we have this experience of internal experience of Krishna, and it transforms according to how we are affected and how we take the process of devotional service. Yes, Sukarna Prabhu.
These two verses from the sixth chapter came to mind. Sarvabhutastamatmanam, Sarvabhutani.
Can you give us the page number?
Page number 299 and 300.
Okay.
Chapter 6, verses 29 and 30. Sarvabhutastamatmanam, Sarvabhutani chatmani, Ikshate yoga yuktatma, Sarvatra samadarshanaha. And then Yomang pashyati sarvatra sarvang chamai pashyati tasyahang na pranashyami sachame na pranashyati. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me.
Yeah, and we can see in the purport, Prabhupada uses the verse again, Premanjana Chudita Bhakti Vilochanena, which we've cited a couple times in this discussion, and that relates to our consciousness. If we've developed love for Krishna, we'll see him inside and outside. And if we haven't, we won't see him anywhere. You just don't see him. Yes.
There is a case of Darup Brahman where the spiritualists see it as wood. I mean, the spiritualists see it as spiritual, and the materialists see it just as wood. And it's connected with the Achintya Bheda Bheda theory. I mean, the spiritualist sees it as spiritual, the Daru Brahman, which is the Jagannath, the Puri Daru Brahman, whereas the materialist sees it as wood.
Yeah. And you know, of course, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to see Jagannath for the first time, just after he had taken sannyas, he saw Krishna and he fainted. Every time he saw Jagannath, he saw Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he became overwhelmed with love and ecstasy. So there's a verse given in the Bhagavatam about how those who have hellish consciousness, they see the deity made as brass or wood or something like that. They don't see it. And as one hears, through the process of hearing, actually, the form of the deity is revealed. Because the deity really is a revealed form of the Lord, which has emanated from the pure devotee. Even in the case of Lord Jagannath, we heard the other night at Bali Mardan's house about how the form, isn't it Bali? How about the form of Lord Jagannath is manifested by the desire of a pure devotee to see the Lord. And then he made an arrangement for that deity to become manifest, right? And all the deities actually, when we read about Vidura's traveling all over India, he left his household because he was insulted by Dhritarashtra. And he tried to dissuade him from abusing the Pandavas the way he was. And when Duryodhan wouldn't listen to anything he was saying and insulted Vidura, he took it as an opportunity to go out and visit Krishna and all the holy places on pilgrimage. So he stayed there out on pilgrimage, and he traveled from one temple to the next just to see the various forms of the Lord, all the deity forms of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada mentions there that all those various forms of the Lord, and they're unlimited. If you made it your occupation just to travel around India to see all the deity forms of the Lord, how long do you think it would take you? How many lifetimes? What if you just did it in America? And that's much to the point. I mean, previously there weren't many deity forms of the Lord in America, but after Prabhupada came here, now they're numerous, so numerous that just in California, there you can go on pilgrimage. So the pure devotee sees the Lord within his heart, and the Lord reciprocates and also manifests himself externally as the archa vigraha form to accept service from others. And those who come into that environment oftentimes don't see it. They don't know the science, actually. They might come and see the deity and say, you know, what is that? Oftentimes people come to the Jagannath Rath Yatra and they look up and they see the gigantic carts coming down and they see the form of Jagannath and they just, okay, tell me, what's going on? They don't know. But if they come and they sit and they hear for some time and they take prasadam and their senses become purified after a while, then they'll render service and they'll desire to come up to the point of actually serving the Lord in that form. Are the millions and millions of people that go to Tirupati every year just bewildered by some kind of idol worship? Were the great acharyas engaged in idolatry? No, they were great learned scholars. And the people, the sentiments that come out of people when they go and see Balaji, and they'll wait in line for days and hours and hours, the way people here in America sometimes will wait in line to buy an iPhone. They'll wait in line to have 2 second darshan with Balaji. Is that just out of some kind of artificial fervor, or are they experiencing something internal? Are they seeing something there? And yes,
I have one comment on that. Like the Daru Brahman, Lord Krishna sent the Daru Brahman into the sea, and also the Daru Brahman deity was not carved by any ordinary carver, it was carved by Vishwakarma. That makes it very spiritual.
Yeah, and the first deities, Jagannath deities that we had in large Jagannath deities, well, the first Jagannath deities came from Cost Plus. A devotee named Malati was in 1967. She was looking around at Cost Plus. You know what that is? Pier 1 Imports now. Have you heard of that?
No, it's not. It's called World Market.
They changed it again. I haven't been shopping in a long time.
Pier 1 is a different store. It's on
Stevens Creek. Anyway, they sell Cost Plus? Okay.
Cost Plus World Market.
World Market. Cost Plus has been around for a long time. They bring in imports from all over the world. So Balati was shopping there. And she saw these deities. She didn't have any money, but she picked one up and brought it home anyway out of the store. And she brought it up to Prabhupada, and she said, I found this. It's from India. And Prabhupada was writing, and he got down off of the seat he was on and offered obeisances. And she thought, this is something I found. And then he said, are there any more, any other different ones? And she said, yes, there are. Can you go get them? So she went back, and she got Baladeva and Subhadra and brought them back. And then Samasundar was a bit of a Vishvakarma. He was a carver. And so Srila Prabhupada asked him to carve large deities like that. And you know, interesting thing, he had employed all these young Americans who didn't know anything about deity worship really at first. While he was carving the deity the first time, the Prabhupada came into the room, or came up on the roof where he was carving, and there was a package of cigarettes on Jagannath's head, on the deity that he was, and so Prabhupada just flicked the package off onto the ground. And of course, later on, the devotees began taking up more of the regulative principles. But my point is that they were able to serve the deity and even create a Jagannath deity by the influence and the vision of a pure devotee. And that's where the deity comes from. No one would know what the deity was or how to worship the deity if it wasn't coming from the internal realization of a devotee who expresses his or her worship in a certain way and then brings other people into that environment and they begin to worship. Yes.
I always think it's a very beautiful thing that Lord Jagannath is especially merciful, and that the original Lord Nilamadava was for a long time worshipped by a tribe of pig herders, Shabaras, the pig herding people, and that Lord Jagannath decided to appear in this Hare Krishna movement among the hippies of San Francisco who had become Srila Prabhupada's followers, because I think maybe worshipping Radha and Krishna at that time, before they were really ready to observe all the rules and regulations, they might have committed more offenses.
Nice parallel, really nice.
The question is, basically, when in the last statement you mentioned, like, the devotees are inspired to see that vision of, let's say, the deities, and that's when the deities manifested.
Leaving.
There is this Mayavadi conception where they say, oh, God is formless, and you just aspire a form, and then the form appears. So the Mayavadis will think in this way, and we are thinking this way. Can you give any comments on that?
Well, we follow the Shastra. Avyaktam vyaktamapanam mandite mama buddhaya param bhavam ajananto mama buddha maheshwaram. Krishna gives this definitive answer to this conundrum. It's not a conundrum for the devotees, because the devotees understand that brahmano hi pratishtaham amritas yavayascha shashvatasya dharmasya sukasya ikantikasya. Krishna says, I'm the basis of the impersonal Brahman. It's coming from me. It's very clear in that verse. And then he says in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that it's not that I manifest from the unmanifested. It's not that I'm avyakta and then I become vyakta, that the impersonal becomes produces something that's personal and then I go back into that. He says definitively that I'm eternally the Supreme Person and everything manifests from me. Everything emanates from me. So we take as evidence what Krishna says directly in the Bhagavad Gita. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is, that Krishna is the source, he's the manifestation of everything. And the deity form of the Lord is there, mentioned by Krishna himself in the Srimad Bhagavatam to Uddhava, as one of his incarnations. Archa Vigraha means he actually incarnates in that way, as Karunath Prabhu was saying, out of special mercy, to accept the worship of devotees who don't have spiritual vision yet, but they can see material elements, and through hearing and serving the deity under guidance, then they can actually see Krishna's spiritual form even within the material element. And it's compared to a post office box. If you want to mail a letter, you can't go and just throw it in any box. First of all, you have to put an authorized stamp on it, and then you have to go find a U.S. postal box, and you put it in that box. and deliver it. So the impersonalist view, this panchopasana of taking, their idea is, it doesn't matter what deity you worship, because it's troublesome to worship something impersonal, therefore you conceive some deity form, and temporarily you worship that form. And then once you've come to a certain stage of realization, then you can discard the deity. This is the idea. But this is not supported by Shastra. This is Krishna was asked directly by Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, like, which is better, this impersonal idea or the personal idea? And Krishna said that the impersonal idea is very troublesome. He said those who take to it perfectly, after a long, long period of practice, they might come to the position of the right conclusion, which is worshiping the personal form of the Lord. But the ultimate form of Krishna is personal. And that can be proven from Bhagavad Gita, from Ishopanishad. We have Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasya Pihitam Mukham. That the devotee is praying. This is from the Upanishad, Shruti. And it's saying that beyond, the devotee is praying, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so they can see your form of bliss. He wants to see the form of Krishna beyond the impersonal ray. So it's this kind of worship where one worships the deity and then discards the deity is a concocted idea. And also considering that one deity is as good as the next, that they're all the same, is not supported by Shastra. Bejare munio tagre bhagavan tamadhok sajam satvam vishuram shemaya kalpante yunutaniha. Bhagavatam says that previously all the great sages worshipped Vishnu because he's beyond the three modes of material nature. They worshipped him to become freed from the influence of material nature and attain the highest benefit. Anyone who follows in their footsteps is also eligible for the same. Satvam rajas tamayiti prakritir gunasa. Sattvam rajas tamayiti prakriti gunasa. Hareti fangsam jaha. Okay. Sattvam rajas tamayiti prakriti gunasa. Yukta para. Purusha eka hi hasyadate sityare hari varinchi hareti samja shriyam sit satvat kalu tapasano tanor nirnam suhu. This verse definitively says that the demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are still within the realm of the modes of material nature. Only Vishnu is completely beyond the influence of the three modes of material nature. Sattvam rajas tamayiti prakritir gunas tair. Yukta para purusha eka iha siddhate stityare hari varinchi hariti samja shayamsi tatva tanor sattva tanam nirnam syu. Kalu sattva nirnam syuhu. So the Shastra confirms that Vishnu is beyond the three modes of material nature. He's not part of the destructible material nature. He's the source of the impersonal Brahman. What is to be realized beyond Brahman is the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the conclusion of the Vedas. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought all this out. Srimad Bhagavatam definitively brings this, and Bhagavad Gita is the authority. One can try very hard and screw out an impersonal meaning from Bhagavad Gita. It's difficult, but you can try to do it. But if you take it in consort with other shastras like the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Upanishads, you'll come to the ultimate conclusion, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. Iti matva vajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna is the source of everything. So this panchopasana is not a it's not a bona fide process. It's a concoction. Once Prabhupada gave graphic example when he was walking with a disciple over a small stream or something like that, and he took the hand of the disciple, and when he got to the other side, then he threw his hand away. And that devotee was very surprised because he had thought, maybe I made an offense or something. And then Prabhupada said, I'm making a point that the Mayavadis, they take to the worship of the deity for some kind of expediency. And then as soon as they've crossed over, then their idea, they throw it away. Some kind of ingratitude. So now we're going to worship that Supreme Personality of Godhead in his archa form. Krishna has appeared here as Sri Sri Radha Madan Mohan and manifested Vrindavan even in this place. We're worshiping Radha Krishna, but we worship the deities, of course, more in the mood of Lakshmi Nisringa in our sadhana bhakti, our practice of worshiping the deity through rules and regulations. And however, everyone can become qualified to approach the deity in this form. And Krishna has manifested here in this form just so that we can take advantage. So we're going to do that now by having arti, offering. Pujari will come and offer various articles to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the enjoyment of his senses. And we're doing that for his pleasure. And in doing so, we'll feel pleasure. We're not doing it to reach some ends of throwing the deity away in the end, like the Mayavadis, but out of bhakti.